You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. No one would argue that President Bush has been a champion of labor, and on Thursday, hundreds of union and community members protested Bush during a campaign stop in southern Nevada. Bush was speaking on jobs and the economy at the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners Union Hall. Protesters were also angry about Bush's decision to allow Yucca Mountain to be turned into a nuclear waste dump.
The governor of Kentucky is being sued by labor unions representing thousands of state workers. Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher is being sued by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, the Service Employees International Union, the auto workers, and the Teamsters for abolishing an advisory council that was used by unions to bargain with the state government. The council was set up by the previous Democratic governor, Paul Patton, and allowed categories of employees to vote to be represented by a union during discussions of workplace conditions. The suit, filed Thursday, claims the governor refused to honor union contracts.
Still no progress between U.S. Airways and the Machinist Union this week. On Friday, shares of the airline fell by 23% due to the chief executive's announcement that a deal could not be reached. U.S. Airways had previously announced that it wanted to have all labor agreements signed by September 30th, the deadline set by the U.S. government to avoid defaulting on a $900 million loan. The pilots and flight attendants unions have also been reluctant to accept the hundreds of millions of dollars in pay and benefit cuts demanded by U.S. Airways. It's almost certain that the airline will file for bankruptcy in September.
45 hotel workers were arrested Saturday in a demonstration to bring attention to their union contract dispute. The workers were part of a larger protest of 2,000 union employees in downtown Los Angeles. Police say they arrested the protesters after they failed to disperse after the 30 minutes allowed for the demonstration wore up. Employees at five downtown hotels have been demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as contracts for employees in seven other cities, including Chicago, Boston, and New York. If hotel worker contracts in all of those cities end at the same time, it would give the hotel worker union massive bargaining leverage in the future.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, between 1996 and 2002, more than 1 million immigrants have been deported from the United States. Mexicans were by far the highest number of deportees, with over 826,000, followed by Hondurans, Salvadorians, and Guatemalans, each over 27,000 deported.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
It's been said that you don't know what hell is until you've had an insurance salesman in your living room prattling on eternally about term life annuities. But I've recently learned about a deeper level of hell reserved for insurance company hucksters who, get this, are ripping off America's young soldiers who are headed into the dread of the Iraqi war. Companies such as American Amicable Life Insurance have weaseled their way onto our basic training bases where they pose as semi-official military agents. They gather boot camp grunts into so-called classes where the unscrupulous agents proceed to pick the pockets of underpaid soldiers. The fleecing is presented by the insurance companies and the military as a compulsory briefing on personal finances. With superior officers in the room, the agents talk of investments and walk the unsuspecting troops through pages of paperwork, getting them to sign blind authorizations to deduct money from their meager monthly paychecks. The briefings don't mention that the 19 and 20-year-old soldiers are not really buying investments, but life insurance. Nor is it pointed out that they will pay far more in costly premiums than they'll ever draw out. Also, the insurance is unnecessary, since nearly every soldier is covered by a low-cost military policy that pays 10 times what these private scams do. It's bad enough that our young men and women are thrust into a war of lies in Iraq, but it's a moral abomination that insurance gougers are allowed to prey on them at home. Yet, not only does the Pentagon turn a blind eye to this sleazy scam, but so does Congress. The lobbying front for the companies, the American Council of Life Insurers, has used its campaign donations to get lawmakers to block any effort to stop this corporate thievery. This is Jim Hightower saying, these companies, lobbyists, Congress critters, and military officials are participating in crass war profiteering, and they deserve a special place in hell.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Monday. Greetings to our patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. A lot in the news. Hugo Chavez has prevailed after a coup attempt sponsored by, allegedly sponsored by the United States, and after a California-style recall. He survived this thing that was apparently largely funded by the oil companies and people associated with them. The thing that really kicked this thing over, as the New York Times reported last week, was when a few years back Chavez said, well, you know, the oil companies, see, they've got the fifth largest supply of oil in the world, and they're one of the major suppliers of oil to the United States. And he said, well, you know, the oil companies are paying us 15% of what they get for our oil, and we really think they should give us more. We think they should give us 30%. And, you know, they get to keep 70%. Isn't that enough? After all, the price of oil is going up. But the oil companies didn't like that. They launched this huge campaign to get him out. And Chavez, which raises the question. Now, you have folks on the right saying, well, the guy's a socialist. You know, he likes Fidel Castro. I mean, that's the smear, you know. But, well, actually, there's some truth to it. I think he does like Fidel Castro, which baffles me. But in any case, the question, how socialist can a country get before it gets bizarre? I mean, you know, the right wing's argument is that when politicians engage in social programs, for example, if a politician advocates home mortgage deductions, which is a form of welfare for the middle class, it's an income redistribution, right? You get to deduct it from your taxes if you're in the middle class, and somebody who doesn't have a home mortgage doesn't get to deduct it. Somebody who makes millions, hundreds of millions of dollars a year, really, you know, it's kind of inconsequential to them. Somebody who's very poor is probably renting. So there's all these arguments sort of against it, right? So you could argue a form of welfare or Social Security or unemployment or Medicare or Medicaid. Any of these, public education, free public education. And they say, you know, when politicians give things to people, and then that causes people to vote for them, that's buying people's votes. Well, you know, actually, the last time I looked, that was called democracy, that you vote for the politicians who do the things that you want done. And, you know, we get to decide whether we want to have Social Security or not. We get to decide whether or not we want to have a national health care system. We get to decide whether, although 85% of us want one and we don't have one yet, which is a testimonial to how corrupted our political system has become by the lobbyists, the insurance industry, and the medical industry. But that's a whole other rant. But anyhow, so the argument on the right side goes, you know, if politicians keep giving people what they want over and over and over again, eventually what the people will say is, take everything from the rich and give it to us, the poor, and we will become the middle class and there will be no more rich. And if you have no more rich, you will have no more economy because the rich create the businesses and own the businesses, blah, blah, blah. Well, that latter part is actually a fantasy. The majority of new job creation in the United States is done by small businesses, and the average, according to the Small Business Administration, the average income of the owner of a small business in the United States is around $60,000 a year. So when you hear them say, oh, you know, by increasing, by Kerry saying that the taxes on income over $200,000 a year is going to cripple small, nonsense. Okay. But in any case, this is the argument. The people will, if you just let the people vote for the politicians who offer them the most, you're going to have politicians who will offer them everything, and you're going to end up with a destroyed country. And so the conservatives want to save us from ourselves. The nanny state of the conservatives. Well, the reality, and you see this over and over again, in countries where you actually have elections. And this is why, you know, I say Cuba is not an example of this, but Venezuela clearly is. The reality is that people will vote for programs that they consider useful and helpful and want. And yet, if a government started giving away everything, if the government engaged in an absolutely massive transfer of wealth and started bringing down the ability of business people to do business in a country, for example, it would crash the economy, and the people would vote the bums out. See, there's this automatic self-regulating mechanism called democracy that, you know, right-wing commentators seem not to know about. So anyhow, democracy has triumphed, apparently, and would have, I suppose you could argue, regardless of the outcome, simply because there was an election in Venezuela. By the way, in the second hour of our program today, we're going to have on Kevin Zeese, the head of Nader's campaign. It should be an interesting conversation. And I encourage you to call in at that time if you want. Or anytime. Our number 1-866-889-8894. The website, tomhartman.com. You can drop into our chat room if you would like. Have you seen the new ad? MoveOn.org has just placed this ad. It's starting, actually, I believe it's starting next week. I may be wrong, but it just went up on the web a few hours ago. And I'm just going to play you the audio for this little 30-second piece. And I'm playing this straight off the web, so it may hiccup a little bit. But here's the ad. It starts out with a picture of George W. Bush as, you know, in his Air National Guard uniform. And then you see a document of his with a rubber stamp on it, and then it goes on. So it's basically an ad about that Swift Vote Veterans for Truth ad.
George Bush used his father to get into the National Guard, was grounded, and then went missing. Now he's allowing false advertising that attacks John Kerry, a man who asked to go to Vietnam and who served with dignity and heroism. Well, here's what a true Republican war hero said. I think the ad is dishonest and dishonorable. I think the Bush campaign should specifically condemn the ad.
It's a picture of
George
McCain.
Bush, take that ad off the air. Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
There you go. And it's going to be interesting. This could be, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays. Because either people are going to say, oh, geez, they're whining about an ad. You know, I mean, how are the undecided voters going to respond? Oh, gee, they're whining about the ad. Or, oh, you mean that other ad is lies? And if people believe the latter, then this could be an absolutely huge backfire. this so-called SWIFO, Veterans for Truth, all of these guys who say, I served with John Kerry, and not one of them was on his boat. Not one of them. None of them. And so we'll see. It's going to be interesting how this stuff shakes out. We have a... Caught you doing something right! Yeah, I think it's always better to catch people doing things right than doing things wrong. Unfortunately, there's a lot of that around, too. But our hero for the day, Senator Tom Harkin. Senator Tom Harkin, this is the article in the Associated Press. Senator Tom Harkin, of course, is the United States Senator from Iowa. Senator Tom Harkin called Vice President Dick Cheney a coward for avoiding service in Vietnam and called on President Bush to end the backdoor draft. The Iowa Democrat was responding Friday to the call-up of a Des Moines, Iowa police officer who has already completed his 8-year military commitment. Harkin echoed comments earlier this week by Des Moines Police Chief William McCarthy, who said the military's treatment of Des Moines police officer Rodell Needham was evil. You've got the chief of police of one of the biggest cities in Iowa calling the army evil. Needham, 26, is being called back to Iraq. Despite having finished his National Guard commitment in April, he's being called up under the military stop loss exemption, which can extend duty in wartime, notes the Associated Press. Harkin, now we're talking about Senator Tom Harkin here, who served as a jet pilot in the Navy, said the exemption was not intended for situations like the war in Iraq. He said first responders like Needham are needed to protect the community. Now, here's the exact quote from Tom Harkin. He said, the part of the U.S. code that provides for this anticipates major wars, major national emergencies. That is not what we're confronting right now. You think about using this law only in extreme cases, only when we're in really dire, dire need. And then the end of quote, the article goes on to say, Harkin also shot back at Kerry, at Cheney, excuse me. Harkin also shot back at Cheney, who said in a visit to Iowa on Tuesday that presidential candidate John Kerry lacks a basic understanding of the war on terrorism cannot make America safer. He noted that Cheney had several student deferments that allowed him to skip serving in Vietnam. When I hear this coming from Dick Cheney, said Tom Harkin, who was a coward who would not serve during the Vietnam War, it makes my blood boil. Those of us who served and those who went in the military don't like it when someone like Dick Cheney comes out and he wants to be tough. Yeah, he'll be tough. He'll be tough with somebody else's blood, somebody else's kids, but none of it, but not when it was his turn to go. So, caught you doing something right, Tom Harkin. It's remarkable to see a Democrat standing up and showing some backbone. Very impressive. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tim, a truck driver on the road. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What state are you in?
Right now I'm in Massachusetts.
Okay. And what's up?
Basically, I'm calling about the Kerry trying to say, you know, oh, I was a Swift Boat veteran, and, you know, Bush just skirted the whole thing. I think, personally, they both skirted it.
How so?
Because, well, Bush, yeah, his dad was in there and probably helped him get out of going anywhere.
Oh, yeah, well, that's well known. He jumped him over 200 positions ahead of the rest of the line to get him into the National Guard before his draft number came up.
Oh, yeah, but see, the thing is, but Kerry's, he did the exact same thing, because I don't think he did when he was out there.
You need to turn down your radio, Tim.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's quite all right. I mean, Kerry's still walking around with a piece of shrapnel in him.
Yeah. I mean,
so how did he avoid service? I mean, just showing up in Vietnam. I can tell you, I've walked into war zones before. You get off the plane, you're scared to death.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. What I'm saying is, though, he's making too big of a deal about it because there's so many more people that got a lot more than a piece of shrapnel.
Yeah.
He's trying to basically run his campaign by the fact that, you know, he actually went to war, so he's going to be a better war president.
But see, I think that's a very real issue, Tim, because you've got a guy who didn't go to war, a whole administration of people who didn't go to war, a whole bunch of chickenhawks who are sending who have sent over 1,000, actually, you know, well, over 1,000 of our allies to their death, and somewhere between 20 and 40,000 human beings have died as a result of decisions these guys made, and none of them have ever seen what it really looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think John Kerry's position is, and many other people like Tom Harkin, hey, we know what death is like on the battlefield. It ain't pretty, and you don't do it easily or lightly. And that's the same thing I think that John McCain is saying. Tim, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour.
Ah! I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. In my new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, I examine how Thomas Jefferson's democratic vision for our nation has been under constant attack by conservatives who see political power as a tool to manipulate laws for their personal financial gain. Among the truths you'll learn by reading this book are how Jefferson warned that the merging of big business with state interests could be the greatest threat to democracy. Today we find that these fascist ideals have been prevalent in virtually all of George Bush's political and judicial appointments and legislation, the same as Hitler did when he overthrew the German democracy in 1933. You'll also learn how new scientific studies show that Jefferson was right when he cited in the Declaration of Independence that democracy was consistent with the laws of nature. Turns out that the natural state of all animals is democracy, and alpha animals only rarely act as leaders. What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy by me, Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Acts through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Why come white milk or make a yellow butter?
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. And speaking of breaking the system, you know, talking about, well, if people move too, or if government moves, politicians move too far in the direction of redistributing wealth, of restricting trade, of, you know, whatever it may be, that the system will start getting flaky, and that flakiness will make the people uneasy, and the politicians will have to back away from that, or they'll be replaced by other politicians. Consider the opposite side, the flip side of that. Imagine a politician coming out and saying, you know, I think that we should have a society where if you work for a living, then you pay the entire cost of the society. If you, however, don't work for a living, but instead your income is based on what's called unearned income, that is, you invest money. Say you have, you know, a very wealthy family. You invest money, and the return on that money that you've invested, you know, the dividend checks, that you get, or the interest payments that you get, that you're not going to have to pay any interest on that. That we don't want to. We want to have a society where people who don't work but have an income don't have to pay any taxes. They don't have to pay anything for the benefits of the society. They don't have to, you know, it's not their problem. We're going to leave it to the people who work for a living and let them be the ones entirely who have to deal with it. Do you think that Americans would go along with that? I suspect not. I suspect there would be a problem with it. And yet that is exactly what George Bush is proposing with what he calls the ownership society, which is his new sales pitch. Let me give you a little more about this in just a second. First, let's bring on Kevin, who's got some news from Iraq via his son, you said?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Kevin in Tampa, Florida.
How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
By the way, I got my bumper sticker Saturday. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. That you won on
remember
the contest.
That?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I wanted to call you. You know, I've talked to you before. My son's in Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to pass on some information that I got from him on Saturday. He called.
Uh-huh.
And we're not getting the news. He's been there since February, and he said it is the worst now that it's ever been since he's been there.
Yeah, it really feels to me like, you know, at this very remote distance. But I've been in countries that have been undergoing revolutions and or on the edge of them, and it really feels to me like a country that's on the edge of civil war.
He told me that this is the absolute worst it's been in the 6 months he's been there.
Yeah.
And we've got good news on it. He's coming home in October.
Ah, wonderful.
He's not even staying a full year. Their unit's being replaced by another unit.
That's great.
It has to do with the elections that's supposed to happen in January.
Yeah, that's great news. Great news, Kevin. Thanks for
the call.
Yeah,
but I wanted to pass on. We're not getting the whole news.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I believe you. And thanks for that call. I appreciate it. Shannon in Oklahoma's on the line. Hey, Shannon, we've got about a minute and a half here.
All right, I'll make it quick. I just had two real quick points.
Sure.
First of all, that caller that called in about both Kerry and Bush both being cowards, you know, it's really frustrating. You're right. Kerry is walking around with shrapnel in his leg, and he was only there for 4 months because he got injured and got his way out that way.
Yeah.
But the whole idea behind all this crap the right wing is putting out is to make people angry that John Kerry's running on his military service. And, you know, that's the best thing to run on these days is in the middle of all these wars.
Well,
and
yeah, and Karl Rove's strategy is that a good offense is better than a defense. You know, the best defense is a good offense. And so because they have nothing to defend, they're having to go out there and try and kick John Kerry in the butt.
Right, and they're succeeding. People like that last or that caller before last. I mean, they're just buying it, hook,
yeah,
line, and sinker. You know, without any,
yeah,
problem.
Yeah,
so my second point was you had made a point about a democracy, how the system automatically resets itself through elections. How, you know, if somebody gets in and starts screwing us, well, then they got to face an election.
Right,
and that's the ultimate, you know, decision, the ultimate protection in a democracy. Well, that's the whole point behind these die bulb machines, is we're losing that protection. They don't.
Yeah.
No paper trail or anything.
Well, exactly. You're exactly right, Shannon. And that's the terrible danger and of this, and why, you know, Thomas Paine said that if you take away a man's boat, you've taken away his freedom, his liberty, and that's the ultimate insult. You can't allow that to happen. Great point, and that's why we need to be on these guys. Thanks, Shannon. Well, at 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. No one would argue that President Bush has been a champion of labor, and on Thursday, hundreds of union and community members protested Bush during a campaign stop in southern Nevada. Bush was speaking on jobs and the economy at the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners Union Hall. Protesters were also angry about Bush's decision to allow Yucca Mountain to be turned into a nuclear waste dump.
The governor of Kentucky is being sued by labor unions representing thousands of state workers. Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher is being sued by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, the Service Employees International Union, the auto workers, and the Teamsters for abolishing an advisory council that was used by unions to bargain with the state government. The council was set up by the previous Democratic governor, Paul Patton, and allowed categories of employees to vote to be represented by a union during discussions of workplace conditions. The suit, filed Thursday, claims the governor refused to honor union contracts.
Still no progress between U.S. Airways and the Machinist Union this week. On Friday, shares of the airline fell by 23% due to the chief executive's announcement that a deal could not be reached. U.S. Airways had previously announced that it wanted to have all labor agreements signed by September 30th. The deadline set by the U.S. government to avoid defaulting on a $900 million loan. The pilots and flight attendants unions have also been reluctant to accept the hundreds of millions of dollars in pay and benefit cuts demanded by U.S. Airways. It's almost certain that the airline will file for bankruptcy in September.
45 hotel workers were arrested Saturday in a demonstration to bring attention to their union contract dispute. The workers were part of a larger protest of 2,000 union employees in downtown Los Angeles. Police say they arrested the protesters after they failed to disperse after the 30 minutes allowed for the demonstration were up. Employees at five downtown hotels have been demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as contracts for employees in seven other cities, including Chicago, Boston, and New York. If hotel worker contracts in all of those cities end at the same time, it would give the hotel worker union massive bargaining leverage in the future.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, between 1996 and 2002, more than 1 million immigrants have been deported from the United States. Mexicans were by far the highest number of deportees, with over 826,000, followed by Hondurans, Salvadorians, and Guatemalans, each over 27,000 deported.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 27 and a half minutes before the hour. Welcome to our feature, Swami on the News, with America's best-known political guru and uncommentator, Swami Beyond Ananda. Swami is the author of a new book, Swami for President, a seven-step plan to heal the body politic and cure electile dysfunction. Welcome, Swami. Are you there?
Nope, I'm still here, but that is neither here nor there.
Ah, this is a pretty tight presidential race, and it seems as if each side is taking the Ralph Nader candidacy seriously. The Democrats are trying to keep him off the ballot, and the Republicans are funding him. So, Swami, how do you feel about Ralph Nader running?
Well, you know, I would love to see Ralph Nader run. In fact, I volunteered to lead the mob that chases him. You know, back in 2000, Ralph Nader said there was no difference between Bush and Gore. And he was right, sort of, because look, Bush became president, and we got plenty of Gore. Makes you wonder, if Gore had become president, but never mind.
Yeah, there are those who would argue that we shouldn't have to vote for the lesser of two evils. What do you say about that?
Well, I think it was Confucius who said, those who fail to choose the lesser of two evils end up with the greater evil.
Yeah.
Because the way our electoral system is set up, Ralph Nader can't actually win. All he can do is make Kerry lose. In other words, even if there is a progressive majority in this country, voting for Nader will help put a regressive minority in power again. So we may not be thrilled with Kerry, but the choice is ours. We can vote for positive change in small increments or get negative change in large excrements.
But still, do you think the Democrats deserve our support? I mean, shouldn't progressives, as Ralph Nader suggests, stand together to teach the Democrats a lesson?
Hey, listen, here's an idea. Let's teach the Republicans a lesson. Let's work together to restore the Democrats as the majority party, and then let's tussle over who gets to lead the majority, instead of fighting for the booby prize of who gets to lead the minority party. I mean, which party sounds like more fun? So I say first things first. Voting for Nader to knock off the Democrats, well, it reminds me of the Aggie joke that I heard when I lived in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
An Aggie returns home unexpectedly and finds his wife in bed with his best friend. The husband pulls out a gun and puts it to his own head. The wife and friend burst out laughing. And the husband says, "What are you laughing at? You're next." So for some reason, the Aggie husband reminds me of the Naderites.
Yeah.
So progressives, let us not shoot ourselves in the foot this election. And for goodness sakes, let's not shoot ourselves in the head. This is Swami Beyondananda signing off. May you wake up laughing and leave laughter in your wake. And may the farce be with you.
Well, thank you, Swami. Swami Beyondananda can be found online at www.wakeuplaughing.com. Thank you so much for coming on our program today. And there he goes, off into the ether. A new Bush campaign ad pushes the theme of an ownership society. I mentioned this just in the last segment there, and this is George Bush saying, "I understand if you own something, you have a vital stake in the future of America." Sort of, you know, suggesting that if you're born a multimillionaire like George W. Bush was, you have a reason to want to try and protect that. And therefore, you're more patriotic and more American. But see, I always thought that everybody who was a citizen, everybody who lives in this nation, everybody who benefits from the blessings of liberty and of our form of government, everybody who is defended by the police and protected by the fire departments, everybody who is educated by our public education system, everybody who makes use of our public roads, everybody who has the benefit of living in a civil society, in a country where you don't, you know, when you walk out the street, you're not confronted by a horde of begging, leprous kids. You don't get shot at as you're walking down the street just simply because you happen to be walking down the street. There are, you know, large parts of the world where that's the reality. And I always figured that even if you don't own anything, even if you're in debt, that you own a piece of America, that you have a share in America. You know, I frankly don't get this strange idea that the Bushies are trying to promote, that the more somebody owns, the more American and patriotic they are, the more committed to the United States they are. In fact, if anything, it seems like the opposite. You get people like Dick Cheney, who owns tens of millions of dollars, and is head of Halliburton. What did he do? He reincorporated Kellogg, Brown, and Root offshore in the Bermudas so he wouldn't have to pay taxes to the United States, and so he could do business with Saddam Hussein, Iran, and North Korea. Excuse me, not North Korea, Libya. And it seems to me almost like it's worked backwards. Certainly in the case of Cheney. But this is the way that these guys are going to be pushing this extreme elitism, this extreme Republican elitism of, you know, let's allow the most elite in America, the most wealthy in America, to pay no taxes. You'll remember a year and a half ago, this was George W. Bush's proposal. Reduce the tax on capital gains and on dividends to zero. And keep intact and keep, you know, relatively high the tax on labor. And they had to settle for a 15% tax on dividends. But at that, you know, people who make their money sitting around the pool waiting for the check to show up pay half the taxes, more or less, of the rest of us. And corporations, which paid half the taxes in the United States in the 1950s and 1960s, and I mean, going all the way back to the turn of the century, corporations now pay about 7 or 8% of the taxes in the United States. The official number, actually, I think is around 12 to 15%. But then when you back out of that all the various forms of corporate welfare, it boils down even lower. Which, of course, means that the rest of us have to make up the difference. And yet the corporations are making use of the commons, of the educated workforce that we're providing them, of the roads, of the transportation infrastructure, of the communications infrastructure, of the legal system. In fact, they make a heavier use of the legal system probably than you and I do. To enforce contracts, the banking system. These are all things that we pay for. You say, well, the banks are private banks. No, I'm talking about the Federal Reserve Bank and the Treasury, you know, our Treasury system. We're paying for that. We pay for the Treasury Department. We pay to have a stable currency so that people can do business. Shouldn't they pay their share of that? See, I believe that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was absolutely spot on correct when he said taxes are the price of admission to a civil society. And what we have here is a bunch of people who want to jump over the turnstile. They don't want to pay the price of admission. And this is what George W. Bush is calling the ownership society. Those who own society get to run society, basically. And, you know, the way they're going to be pitching, well, you should own a piece of your medical program. Well, you know, you got to have something to own it to begin with, right? How can that work? Well, you should own part of your retirement. Well, you know, a lot of people have 401ks. They are putting away money. They don't need another tax shelter between IRAs and SEPs and 401ks. The middle class can put away pretty much as they want for their retirement. But George W. Bush is going to sell a new tax shelter for the extremely wealthy as Social Security reform. Mark my words. This ownership society, privatizing Social Security. And then they have the audacity to come along and say, and I quote, permanently strengthen Social Security system without changing benefits for those now in or near retirement and without raising payroll taxes on workers, end quote. We'll work in a privatized environment. In other words, we're going to take the Social Security system and we're going to reduce the income to it, the number, you know, the percent of people who are paying into it. And this is somehow going to strengthen it. And we're not going to cut benefits and we are not going to raise taxes. It's as Paul Krugman points out in the New York Times, this is 2 - 1 = 4 math. And it just doesn't work. Simply doesn't work. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Don in Northern Arizona is on the line. Hey, Don, what are your thoughts on this?
Good morning. Good morning. Afternoon, or whatever time it is.
Yeah, all of the above.
All of the above. Oh, very good. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Do you believe everybody should be paying taxes? In your philosophy?
In my philosophy? you know, I believe that all of us should be participating in this society. And
Does everybody need to be paying taxes? That's the question.
Well, you know,
according to the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, 34% of the working population pay zero federal income tax.
But that's not, you know, that's not taxes.
That is there according to the government.
That's
34% of the working population pays zero federal income tax.
But they're paying payroll tax, they're paying sales tax, they're paying property tax, they're paying dividends.
Social Security, but they're not paying any federal taxes. 34%.
Oh, they're paying all kinds of federal taxes. They're just not paying federal income taxes.
You're talking about federal income tax, and that's specifically what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Federal income tax, I think everyone should be paying at least something towards the government for these roads.
Well, Don,
services. Don,
here's my take on it. I agree with Thomas Jefferson when he suggested, when they were putting together tax policy in 1789, and he said that people should only have to pay taxes after their first wants are met.
After what, sir?
After your first wants are met. In other words, if you're once you set a threshold and you say below this threshold, somebody can't live a decent life.
Okay.
And if they're earning below that threshold, then they shouldn't have to pay taxes.
Well, there's a lot of people that take the opportunity. They choose not to live below that threshold. There's a lot of homeless people that own the streets that they do not want to come in and learn.
Don, you are revealing a breathtaking amount of ignorance here. Obviously, you've never hung out with homeless people.
No, I'm not. I'm just taking what the government says and the government, the offices of the...
I've never heard the government say that homeless people are homeless because they choose to sit on the street.
I grew up very, very poor. I mean, we moved 17 times in 16 years. You know?
Yeah.
And, gosh, it was very hard in life. But you must understand, you know, this country is the most wonderful country in the world, and no one...
Don, did you go to public school?
Yes. Part-time.
Okay. Yeah. So
part-time, yes. So, yeah, I did.
Okay,
yes,
so,
I did.
So we all helped you get where you are.
Let me tell you this.
And I'll bet you've got this weird myth that you got there all by yourself, don't you?
What? I have a weird myth that I'm out there by myself?
That you got where you are all by yourself.
Well, no. I think somebody helped. And I know the individuals that have helped. I do not believe welfare helps at all because it's a constantly growing. Welfare continues to grow, and the same generation of people are still on it.
So Don, what are you going to do? What are you going to do if you create a situation where the corporation is allowed to just say, you know, screw the minimum wage laws, forget about maximum number of hours. If anybody wants to work in America, we're going to go back to the rules as they were in 1890. And it's a 10-hour work day, a 7-day work week. You get 12-year-olds can work, and you've got most of the population terrified and poor.
I'm not talking about child labor.
Well, see, that's the end of the road you're traveling down.
No, I'm not. I'm not talking about child labor.
At some point, Don.
I'm talking about people that really want to work. They can find a job, they can work, and they can strive, and they can make a living and contribute to this society.
Yeah,
I'm
right there with you, and anybody who really wants to work in this society should be out there working. And the reality is that a lot of them can't. 1-866-889-8894, Kent in Chicago on the line. Hey, Kent, what's up?
Morning, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Great. I'd like to address something to the idiot you just had on there. And I'm not being mean. I can't think of anything else to call him.
Okay.
To actually suggest that people would keep themselves below a certain income level just so they consciously can avoid paying taxes is so stupid.
Well, no, it's not just so they can't. Not just so they can avoid paying taxes. It's so that they can also get the wonderful benefits of American processed cheese and powdered milk that the government gives out for free.
I guess. And then, you know, following his suggestion, you can tax the poor, the working poor, or the poor poor all you want, but if nothing from nothing is still nothing. So, you know, if this makes those people feel better to think that we're going to somehow go out and take something from people or make them give something they don't have.
Well, this is the thing, Kent, is you find people who probably, like you and me, have made something of their lives, right? They've had some kind of success in their lives.
Yeah.
And then they somehow, like, get this logical derail, and they say, you know, I have this success because I really worked hard and I'm brilliant. And that guy over there who's not successful, he's a failure because he's unmotivated or lazy. Right?
Well, you know, Tom, it comes back to bite us, because if I don't feel like contributing towards the welfare of the less fortunate, those people are going to mug me and take my paycheck.
Yeah, there you go. And that's That's the point that I was trying to make with Don, is that it comes back to what kind of society do we want to live in. And it's a very selfish equation, ultimately. We do this because it's the best for all of us. Thanks for the call, Kent. Good to hear from you.
Thank you, Tom.
10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term. But on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
What would you do if I sang out of tune?
And welcome back. The point I was making about public education is that if you received a public education, you are a welfare recipient. Some folks need more help than others, but what we've agreed is that we're going to give everybody a little bit of help. And the goal is to try and get everybody into the working class, the middle class, whatever, at least get them started. 1-866-889-8894. Charles in Texas is on the line. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just got a comment for Don, I think was his name, that didn't need welfare.
Right.
Well, with the economy as bad as it is and people being out of jobs, if we wouldn't have welfare to take care of some of these people, all we would create is more criminals in our society. For some reason, it's weird that one of the advanced civilizations as we are, we have the highest crime rate in this country.
Yeah, you know, it's a very delicate balance, Charles, because on the one hand, this is something Ben Franklin wrote about this when he went over to England and he wrote a long screed in his diaries and his letters about how the British welfare system was so elaborate and so rich in benefits that many people just kind of sat around and took welfare. This was in the 1700s. And you know, they had no incentive to work. And then on the other hand, that in other parts of Europe, there was no social safety net. And so what you saw was, instead of lazy people, you saw, you know, people who would kill you for a shilling. And it's like, how do you get there's a rational middle point in there. And I think that that's what this country has been struggling with since the 30s, is where is that rational middle point? How do we find it where we're helping people, but we're not de-incentivizing them? And I think everybody.
Well, I grew up in Germany. OK.
Yeah.
My dad was in the service when I grew up.
Yes.
And he stayed over there. So I lived under the German social rule, not East Germany, the West. OK.
Sure.
And I had a real bad car accident at one point. I couldn't do the job I trained to do, and I was off for 2 years getting my medical treated.
Right.
Well, the German government at that point turned around and said, well, before you live on our pocket the rest of your life, we'll send you back to school.
Yeah.
They paid my computer schooling in the 80s. I'm now a computer consultant, and when I was over there, instead of making the $15, which I had learned to make, okay, as a trained bookbinder, I was making $20, $25 an hour then,
yeah,
paying way more back in taxes than I had ever paid before.
Right, but see, that's investing in people. Yeah, and what you're describing, Charles, is investing in people rather than welfare.
Right,
and
we have to get people smart enough to be able to work and make a living.
Yeah.
Because these wages that Walmart pays are no way making a living for people.
I could not
see how I can feed my kid on $6 an hour.
No, you can't. That's the Charles Dickens economy. That's the idea, you know, the conservative ideal of, let's go back to the way, you know, England was during when Charles Dickens was writing. You know, you've got Scrooge, who controls everything, and Cratchit, Bob Cratchit, you know, the terrified employee. It's really not the world that we want. I don't think it's not the America that we want. This is Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. No one would argue that President Bush has been a champion of labor, and on Thursday, hundreds of union and community members protested Bush during a campaign stop in southern Nevada. Bush was speaking on jobs and the economy at the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners Union Hall. Protesters were also angry about Bush's decision to allow Yucca Mountain to be turned into a nuclear waste dump.
The governor of Kentucky is being sued by labor unions representing thousands of state workers. Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher is being sued by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, the Service Employees International Union, the Auto Workers, and the Teamsters for abolishing an advisory council that was used by unions to bargain with the state government. The council was set up by the previous Democratic governor, Paul Patton, and allowed categories of employees to vote to be represented by a union during discussions of workplace conditions. The suit, filed Thursday, claims the governor refused to honor union contracts.
Still no progress between U.S. Airways and the Machinist Union this week. On Friday, shares of the airline fell by 23% due to the chief executive's announcement that a deal could not be reached. U.S. Airways had previously announced that it wanted to have all labor agreements signed by September 30th, the deadline set by the U.S. government to avoid defaulting on a $900 million loan. The pilots and flight attendants unions have also been reluctant to accept the hundreds of millions of dollars in pay and benefit cuts demanded by U.S. Airways. It's almost certain that the airline will file for bankruptcy in September.
45 hotel workers were arrested Saturday in a demonstration to bring attention to their union contract dispute. The workers were part of a larger protest of 2,000 union employees in downtown Los Angeles. Police say they arrested the protesters after they failed to disperse after the 30 minutes allowed for the demonstration were up. Employees at five downtown hotels have been demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as contracts for employees in seven other cities, including Chicago, Boston, and New York. If hotel worker contracts in all of those cities end at the same time, it would give the hotel worker union massive bargaining leverage in the future.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, between 1996 and 2002, more than 1 million immigrants have been deported from the United States. Mexicans were by far the highest number of deportees, with over 826,000, followed by Hondurans, Salvadorians, and Guatemalans, each over 27,000 deported.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Attention, Americans. You have the right to free speech. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to protest. To exercise any or all of these rights, please report to the officially designated protest pen, conveniently provided by the authorities. Holy Thomas Paine! Holy Sam Adams! What would the rebels of 1776 say about the autocratic, anti-democratic move by today's powers that be to force dissenters into fenced-off, out-of-the-way cages if they want to express any disagreements with government and corporate policies? The founders fought a revolution so that all of America could be open to free speech, not just a few square yards that they imperiously now dub free speech zones. George W. is the one who pioneered this insult to democracy back when he was governor of Texas, but is now standard police procedure to shove American protesters out of sight and out of mind. I saw it at the Democratic Party's recent convention in Boston, a town that, ironically, considers itself the birthplace of liberty. Everyone from anti-war activists to anti-choice demonstrators were to be shunted into a narrow, dank, half-block strip of asphalt under an abandoned elevated train track. Enmeshed in cyclone fencing topped with razor wire and enclosed with concrete bunkers, this dismal space was not in shouting distance of the convention. A federal judge described the protest zone as an internment camp, and he called it an affront to the idea of free expression. Yet, incredibly, he refused to outlaw it. Just as at the Boston Tea Party, however, the rebellious citizenry took matters into their own hands. Thousands of protesters simply marched right past the police pen and proceeded to the convention hall where they expressed themselves fully and peacefully. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's the American way. To fight the un-American use of free speech zones, call the National Lawyers Guild, 212-679-5100. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
Buy Goodfellas on DVD today. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times calls it the best mob movie ever.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
The masterpiece by Martin Scorsese, nominated for 6 Academy Awards, is on a 2-disc special edition DVD.
Never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut.
Loaded with bonus features, including director commentary, documentaries, and more.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
Goodfellas, buy it today on DVD. Rated R.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. Streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Welcome back. What's Ralph Nader up to? What is Ralph Nader up to? It's a question that we've examined a few different ways on this program in the past, and I'm very pleased to have with us today Kevin Zeese, who is the spokesperson and press secretary for the Nader-Camejo campaign. He works with Ralph Nader in writing all the position statements for the campaign and has helped organize the National Ballot Access Drive. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm pleased to have you here. You know, Kevin, Robert Reich, who I think probably has a pretty good bead on this, given that he was the Secretary of Labor in the last administration and, you know, is no dummy, points out that if you think things are bad under Bush right now, wait until he gets reelected, if he were reelected. He says Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld would be out of the box. They would take the reelection as a mandate to wage the war on terror everywhere and anywhere. Colin Powell would be out. Condi Rice would take over the State Department. Rumsfeld would consolidate power as the president's national security advisor. Wolfowitz would run the Defense Department. It would strengthen the White House's hand on issues such as the assault on civil liberties. We would see Patriot 2 push through Congress. Right-wing evangelicals would solidify their control over the Departments of Justice, Education, Health, and Human Services, curtailing abortions, putting federal funds into the hands of private religious groups, pushing prayer in the public schools, and promoting creationism. Grover Norquist has already said if it happens, the most high-income Americans can expect to see much larger tax cuts, probably all taxes eliminated on capital gains, dividends, and other forms of unearned income. Social Security is going to get shredded, privatized. You're going to have four members of the Supreme Court, at least two, possibly as many as four members of the Supreme Court, replaced so that the damage is over two generations. How can you promote this outcome, Kevin?
I'm not promoting this outcome. That's an absurd conclusion. I'll tell you my thoughts on this. I mean, Rob Reich, of course, is a hardcore Democrat. Not surprised he's in anybody but Bush mode, like so many are. But I wish that John Kerry would stand for something that I could support. And I don't want to support John Kerry. And I'm sorry, I just don't believe him on the war in Iraq, where now he said he voted for it, and now he says he would go to war even with the reality of the lack of weapons of mass destruction. In fact, he says he'll, in the Wall Street Journal review, that he would keep the troops there for his whole first 4 years and would do so longer than George Bush would. And he walks lockstep with Israel, no questioning about the Israeli violations of human rights. He says he's not a redistributionist Democrat to his wealthy contributors, saying, don't worry, I'm not going to take your money and heal the divide between rich and poor in this country. There's just so much I disagree with Kerry on that I can't support him. And, you know, what got me into this campaign, I don't like George Bush at all. He's the worst president of my lifetime, and I'm almost 50 years old. But what got me into this campaign was I went to a event with that Nader was speaking at when he was trying to decide whether to run or not. And what I found refreshing about it was he realized that 2000 and 2004 were different years. That this year, in 2004, we have the Democrats united around anybody but Bush. They'll take a president who supports the war, a president who supports the Patriot Act, who has all these terrible policy options, the drug war, just make a long list. Says nothing on electronic voting. He's totally silent on that. And so they'll support him no matter what. The Republicans, on the other hand, are ripe for division. And we're already seeing that division occurring. In our support base, for example, is the Reform Party. Two-thirds of their members voted for Bush last time. The Arab and Muslim communities, 4 million voters who voted majority for Bush last time, 20% now voting for Nader. And youth who were divided last time.
Are you trying to tell me, Kevin?
We're starting to take apart.
Kevin.
We're starting to take apart Bush's base.
Kevin, are you trying to tell me that Nader's candidacy is going to defeat Bush and get Kerry elected?
It's going to help to defeat
Bush.
But
I thought you didn't like Kerry.
In 2000, for example, 25% of Nader's voters, this is when the Republicans were united, 25% of Nader's voters were Republicans, registered Republicans. 40%, 38% actually were registered Democrats when they were divided, and the rest were people who wouldn't vote for either party. And so even in the 2000, in a year that was very different from 2004, he was getting one quarter of his support from Republicans. So, yeah, I think he's going to take support from the Republican base. We're certainly not counting on any liberal intelligentsia or Democrat support, because I think that they're so frightened by the kind of things that Reich talks about that they're going to vote for anybody but Bush.
You know, Ralph Nader, Kevin, well, let's get back to the original point here that I know that you wanted to talk about, which was the piece that I wrote in Common Dreams where I said that Ralph Nader is deceiving people. And,
right.
And let me lay it out for you exactly what I was talking about. My son went to a Ralph Nader rally and called me up afterwards. You know, he heard Nader speak. And he said, you know, Nader makes a good point. You can have third parties in Europe. Why can't we have them here? And I've had probably in the last year and a half, at least a dozen people call this program and ask that same question, usually after reading or something that Nader wrote or listening to him. If you do a Google search on Ralph Nader's speech transcripts, you get about 2,500 hits. If you insert the words proportional representation, you get zero hits. So Nader's running around
the
country.
That's bizarre.
Well, try it.
He does bring it up. That's bizarre.
Try it. I have never once.
I'd suggest that what you do rather than that is go to his website, which is votenair.org. Go to issues and go to election reform. He talks about
on
a
his,
list of things.
On his website, but not in his speeches before college campuses.
He has a specific policy paper on IRV, instant runoff voting.
Yeah, and I can point you to policy papers on John Kerry's campaign website that you would love, too. But, you know, that's not what I was talking about. What I was talking about is the message that he delivers as he travels around the country. I have seen him three times this year on television say to the American people and to the commentator, well, you can have third parties in Canada, you can have third parties in France, you can have third parties in Israel. Why can't you have a third party here?
And we actually can have third parties here. There's nothing prohibiting it in the Constitution. We set up a system that blocks that, but that can be changed. And if you looked at the debate he had with Howard Dean on National Public Radio, the IRV issue came up, and he supported that and pushed that. And Howard Dean agreed it made a lot of sense. So he is pushing IRV. So I don't know what you're talking about.
No, well,
that's a lot of nonsense. He always
I would encourage you, Kevin, to read his transcripts.
Candidate, Peter Camejo, who's a very active Green, he is very strong on IRV. He and one reason we picked him was because he's so good on democracy issues.
Yeah, well, I would encourage you to read the transcripts of some of his speeches. They're online.
Well, I'd encourage your people to go to votenair.org and see what he stands for.
Okay. You are taking help from the Republican Party here. You've got
That's a lot of nonsense, too.
Okay. 3,198 signatures were submitted Thursday to the Secretary of State's office in Iowa. And
right, and we were – actually, what happened in Iowa was interesting. We collected a little signature ourselves, and we got a very strange – we saw some reports in the press about Republican support in a kind we don't like. We do want Republican support because 25% of our voters last time were Republicans and were going after Bush's base. But we saw reports of Republican people going out and saying, sign this to keep Kerry from becoming president by supporting Nader. And that's obviously not our strategy. And so we got a strange phone call in Iowa from somebody who said, I have 700 signatures for Ralph Nader, and I'd like to give them to you. Could you come to a neutral place so I can give them to you? And what's your name? I'm not going to give you my name. So we refuse to take those signatures. We have doubts about that being legitimate signatures. So we didn't. Whatever Republican signatures were gathered, if they were, we didn't take any of those.
Well, in fact, the Associated Press reported.
Pennsylvania, by the way. In Pennsylvania, we turned down 10,000 signatures from people who seemed like they were Republicans as well. Now, they didn't come out and say they were Republicans. They were just suspicious.
Yeah,
we turned those signatures down. So we don't want that kind of help.
Are you gonna turn down the signatures in Michigan?
In Michigan, we've actually sued to get on the Reform Party ballot line and won't need any signatures. That's what's been so bizarre about the reporting on the Michigan thing. The press seems to not report. What's really relevant is we have sued to avoid taking those signatures. We've sued to get the Reform Party line because we've been endorsed by the Reform Party nationally and the only recognized affiliate, and so we won't need those signatures. We didn't collect signatures in Michigan because that was not our strategy. Our strategy was not to collect signatures, but to get on the ballot through the Reform Party nomination, which Nader received.
But you're getting on the ballot with those signatures from the Republicans.
No, we're not. We filed suit to get on the ballot through the Reform Party.
Okay.
That's pretty aggressive, isn't it, filing suit?
Yeah, it is.
We're trying to avoid that kind of help, and we keep saying it over and over again. I'm actually much more concerned about the Democratic Party and their anti-democratic efforts. Let me just tell you what happened in Oregon on Friday. It's just amazing how far the Democratic Party has decayed into a pseudo-Republican party being so anti-democratic. In Oregon, they had lawyers going through our signatures as we submitted them, getting the names and addresses of our circulators and sending them a letter, threatening them on lawyer's letterhead with a felony conviction, 5 years in jail, and a $100,000 fine if there was anything inaccurate on their petition. Now, that wasn't bad enough. Then they went to circulators' homes, knocked on their doors. One grandmother reported, one 61-year-old grandmother who had a heart condition reported them knocking on her door at dinner time, interrupting the dinner with her grandchildren, and saying, look, we have these petitions here. What's about this signature number 2 and on line 3 and line 5? We think those are fraudulent, and if they are, you're facing a $100,000 fine and 5 years in jail and a felony. That is disgusting behavior in a democratic country, to be trying to threaten people who are going out and gathering signatures. It's just an amazing act of behavior, and it makes me actually, not want to have anything to do with the Democratic Party in any way, because they've gotten so corrupted by their anti-democratic influence, their quest for power, and their reliance on big corporate money. It's just, I don't want anything to do with them.
Okay, so you're willing to accept that you're saying, I will not vote for the lesser of two evils. I am willing to have the greater of two evils, and sit around smugly saying, I'm better than any of them.
We are running a campaign to make sure the Bush regime is forced out of office. We are going
Come
after
on,
George
Kevin.
Bush in ways
Come
that
on.
Kerry's not.
Yeah,
we're criticizing George Bush more aggressively
Kevin,
than John Kerry.
You just spent 5 minutes on a rant against the Democratic Party.
What's that?
You just spent a 5-minute rant against the Democratic Party.
Well,
I'm not hearing anything
Democratic
about George W. Bush.
Unfortunately, the Democratic Party is behaving. They need to be criticized, too. Because we want to see the Democratic Party become more progressive as well. They need to be pulled with that corporate influence that they have, that hundreds of millions of dollars that they're getting.
Okay, here's
from corporate influence.
Here you go,
Kevin.
We
want to pull them away from that power.
That's a great idea. And Ralph Nader has done, and one of the reasons why I voted for Ralph Nader in 2000 was because he had committed his life to reforming this system, and he did such a marvelous job. The Center for Auto Safety, Public Citizen, all these groups that he started, and I've actually worked with several of these groups, and what he was doing was he was working within the system in a way that would actually produce real change.
Are you still doing that?
No, he's not.
Yeah,
he's standing outside. He's standing outside throwing rocks at the windows.
Excuse me?
I said, you guys are standing on the outside throwing rocks at the windows.
No, we're not. We are in the electoral arena. We are fighting the battle in the electoral arena. We're using our free speech rights, our right to petition.
Kevin, do you think that there's any chance you're going
to
win?
A message in the electoral arena.
Kevin, just to say, do you think, first of all, you can't think that Ralph Nader is going to win. Number two, you just said that you want to change the Democratic Party. Do you really think that standing on the outside and criticizing them and getting you're pushing them and making them more reactionary. Why not infiltrate them and change
them? Why is that? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's what you just described to me.
In fact, when Ralph Nader announced his candidacy, John Kerry said exactly the right thing. He said, I'm not worried about Ralph Nader running because I will take his issues and I will take his voters. If he does that, he has nothing to worry about with Ralph Nader. But so far, he hasn't done that. So far, instead, he's moved to the right. He's more to the right on George Bush.
Okay, we're talking to Kevin Zeese. He's the spokesperson and press secretary for the Nader-Kameho campaign. It's Tom Hartman program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as America's middle class vanishes, I refuse to lie down and watch our great democracy be replaced by a corporate aristocracy. That's why I wrote What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. In this new book, I present a striking call to action and outline what hardworking citizens can do to win back the power we're supposed to command under the United States Constitution. Now, more than ever, we citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president and the author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. If we are to continue to be the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles and, almost more important, we must be led by someone who understands and believes in the people, not the powerful with deep pockets. My new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, is available in bookstores everywhere.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Econonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Econonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Come all you good workers, good news to you, I'll tell of how the good old union has come in here to dwell.
Welcome back, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. That's the question. Which side are you on? 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, TomHartman.com. The website, you can drop into our chat room if you'd like, where there's a lively conversation going on right now. Let's take a few calls. We're on the air with Kevin Zeese. He's the spokesperson and press secretary for the Nader-Kamejo campaign. Works with Ralph Nader in writing all his position papers for the campaign and has helped organize the national ballot access drive. Chuck in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Well, you know, Kevin, I got to tell you, I have been a fan of Ralph Nader since I was a kid. He was a total childhood hero of mine. I think he's done amazing things, and I think he could continue to do amazing things. But I have to tell you that I really honestly don't believe that he's going to accomplish anything in this election for president. I'm not talking about local levels, because I think at local levels he's doing a great thing still. He's going to accomplish anything except get us another 4 years of these right-wing fascists.
Well, obviously I disagree with you, and I think Nader's the only one standing for the right issues. And by having him out there as a voice, you have a fair chance of getting those
for the right
election.
He is going for the right issues, and I think it's just like Tom was saying before the commercial break, that Ralph is 100% on the right side of the issues. He is.
That's right.
But
I agree.
I don't know what to do. I mean, it's like,
it's up to you what you do. I mean, for me, I kind of agree with the Eugene Debs perspective, which is I'd rather vote for what I believe in and not get it than vote for what I don't believe in and get it.
But Eugene Debs ended up in jail.
John Kerry, not get what you want.
Eugene Debs ended up in jail.
So what?
Well, it's not so what.
So what? I mean, he ended up in jail because it was an unfair country in those days, as it is today.
Yeah, he wasn't able to change it.
Well, you know, he made a lot of change. A lot of issues he put forward.
I guess as I get older, I try and become more pragmatic. And I'm just trying to be pragmatic. And to me it's like if we got...
I don't think you've been pragmatic by trying to clean the Democratic Party from the inside. It's like trying to clean the garbage from inside a garbage can.
Okay. Chuck, thanks for the call. I don't think that you're going to convince Kevin here. We'll try.
Yeah, for sure.
Dave in Humboldt County, a retired psychologist who calls from time to time. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning, Tom. And Kevin, I'm sharing the concern of others. I, too, believe that Ralph Nader would be a wonderful president, and I wish there was some way that it could happen. And he certainly speaks to the issues that need to be spoken to. Right. Would you agree, though, I think I'm hearing you agreeing, that the worst of all possible outcomes would be the reelection of Bush? Are you essentially...
I'll tell you, I feel that less and less as the campaign develops. John Kerry actually scares me more and more as he talks. And as I see them act at the local level in the anti-democratic ways, I like the Democrats less and less. So I think it's a marginal improvement to get John Kerry, but the margin is shrinking.
Yeah, I can understand your feelings on that.
And I think in California, you really have the freedom to vote your heart and not your fear. You have a 15-point lead there for John Kerry. So you can vote your heart and not your fear and send a message to John Kerry. I'd urge you to use Nader's campaign in places like California to go to John Kerry and say, you want my vote? Stand for something progressive. Stand for some of the right issues. I have an alternative. I can vote somewhere else. Let him know that he doesn't have your vote. If you just go in there and say, I'll vote anybody but Bush, you'll get nothing for your vote.
I agree with that, but in the end, I fear that this country could never recover from another 4 years of the Bush administration.
I think this is John Kerry's election to lose.
Yeah.
If you look at the reality, you guys are playing with fire, Kevin. I think you have in 4 years ago, people who voted for George Bush who were Democrats regret it. People who vote, even some Naderites regret it. People who voted for George Bush, though, have a lot of doubts about their vote. People who voted for Al Gore don't regret it. They don't want to vote for George Bush. So he's starting out with a majority already, probably a million voter majority already. And I think it's his to lose.
Kevin, I think you're playing with fire. I mean, you are absolutely playing with fire.
I think people vote for John Kerry playing with fire, too.
Okay. Kevin Zeese, the spokesperson and press secretary for the Nader Kameho campaign. The website is votenader.org. Is that it?
That's it.
www.votenader.org for more information. Kevin, thank you for being on our program today.
Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. More than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. No one would argue that President Bush has been a champion of labor, and on Thursday, hundreds of union and community members protested Bush during a campaign stop in southern Nevada. Bush was speaking on jobs and the economy at the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners Union Hall. Protesters were also angry about Bush's decision to allow Yucca Mountain to be turned into a nuclear waste dump.
The governor of Kentucky is being sued by labor unions representing thousands of state workers. Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher is being sued by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, the Service Employees International Union, the auto workers, and the Teamsters for abolishing an advisory council that was used by unions to bargain with the state government. The council was set up by the previous Democratic governor, Paul Patton, and allowed categories of employees to vote to be represented by a union during discussions of workplace conditions. The suit, filed Thursday, claims the governor refused to honor union contracts.
Still no progress between U.S. Airways and the Machinist Union this week. On Friday, shares of the airline fell by 23% due to the chief executive's announcement that a deal could not be reached. U.S. Airways had previously announced that it wanted to have all labor agreements signed by September 30th, the deadline set by the U.S. government to avoid defaulting on a $900 million loan. The pilots and flight attendants unions have also been reluctant to accept the hundreds of millions of dollars in pay and benefit cuts demanded by U.S. Airways. It's almost certain that the airline will file for bankruptcy in September.
45 hotel workers were arrested Saturday in a demonstration to bring attention to their union contract dispute. The workers were part of a larger protest of 2,000 union employees in downtown Los Angeles. Police say they arrested the protesters after they failed to disperse after the 30 minutes allowed for the demonstration wore up. Employees at five downtown hotels have been demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as contracts for employees in seven other cities, including Chicago, Boston, and New York. If hotel worker contracts in all of those cities end at the same time, it would give the hotel worker union massive bargaining leverage in the future.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, between 1996 and 2002, more than 1 million immigrants have been deported from the United States. Mexicans were by far the highest number of deportees, with over 826,000, followed by Hondurans, Salvadorians, and Guatemalans, each over 27,000 deported.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. And we were just talking with Kevin Zeis of the Nader campaign. Kevin predicts this, according to the Chicago Sun-Times, that Nader is going to end up running in 40 states, down from 43 in 2000. Nader's given up on Georgia, Indiana, and Oklahoma, and says, please tell those major parties to stay out of our independent campaign. Although the Portsmouth Herald and New Hampshire reports that David Carney, a GOP consultant, hired workers to gather signatures for Nader's petitions. The Arizona Republic reported that Nader's being represented in his ballot fight by attorney Lisa Hauser, a lawyer for the Arizona Republican Party, who was part of the Bush legal team in the Florida 2000 recount. The Las Vegas Review-Journal reported that a GOP consultant, Steve Wark, through a group called Choices for America, helped Nader qualify for the ballot in the state of Nevada. The San Francisco Chronicle analyzed Nader's relatively meager contributions and found at least 23,000 of the contributions of $1,000 or more in his shoestring campaign coming from people who gave to Bush. And as David Jones, a Democratic fundraiser, pointed out, it's not by accident that the Republicans are doing this. I just have to assume that if there was any reality to the assertion that Nader's candidacy is going to split the vote for George Bush and get Kerry elected, if there was any possible reality to that, the Republicans would not do this, be doing this, because they are spending big bucks and a lot of political capital on this to get Nader on the ballot in all these states. It's making them look like fools, and they know it. They're willing to pay that price. They're willing to show their weakness, because it may be the only way they can win, in my opinion. Time will tell, but 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to weigh in on this. Scott in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hello, Tom. I know your guest is not with us at this point, but I'd just like to reiterate the functional fact that it is not we, the popular voters, who elect the president. It's the Electoral College. Their votes are the only ones that count. And that even if we had instant runoff voting, that would still be the case. Now, that would be a long step in the right direction to have that, but in order for these functional changes to, you know, from other parties to have a true effect, they have to percolate up from the ground level.
Yeah, now here's
that's why you convinced me that the way to do this is to retake over the Democratic Party and do this from the ground up, because that is what works, and that's what gets people understanding how this whole system is put together, the functional reality of it.
Yeah, and Scott, now here's the good news on the thing about the Electoral College. And this is something that came out, actually, of the Supreme Court decision in Bush v. Gore in the 2000 race. And although it's in the Constitution, it's well known, is that the Electoral College, the representatives to the Electoral College are determined by the states any way they want.
Right.
Remember, the state of Florida said, if we do a recount and we find that Al Gore actually won Florida, the legislature is going to override that, and we're going to send electors, we're going to send Bush electors to Washington, D.C. in any case.
They came
right out and said it. So the instant runoff voting for the Electoral College, for the presidential candidate, for the electors, for the presidential candidates, can be put into place right now on a state-by-state basis.
Can I make one other real quick point?
Sure.
I had a recent experience over the weekend at a local mall here, and there was a woman collecting signatures on a petition to get Nader on the ballot. And I didn't sign it. I took it from her, and I looked it over, and then I started asking her some of these questions. And, you know, unfortunately, she couldn't answer them. And she got upset with me and pulled the clipboard back out of my hands and refused to talk with me. And I thought, you know, how can this get anywhere if number one, you're not informed, and number two, you're not willing to become informed or entertain pertinent questions?
Well, she'd probably been hired by the Republicans for 75 cents or a dollar a signature. You know, I mean, this is...
That's an interesting point, but we didn't get that far.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, that was the experience.
Yeah,
and I'm in a state now which 4 years ago was a swing state, and I voted for Nader the last two times. Last time, just for the specific purpose of getting a threshold level so that the Green Party would have some support because he ran as a Green.
Right.
But now I understand that that's not the effective way to go about it.
Well, it may be at a local level. But,
right, exactly. But, it is at a local level, yeah. But not at the presidential level.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck, for the call. Good to hear from you. I am absolutely supportive of the Greens at the local level. There's over 200 communities in the United States now that have instant runoff voting because of the participation of Greens. It's a really great thing, but what Nader might do in this campaign is positively terrifying. Jim in Ann Arbor, hold on the line just a minute. We've got Ellen Ratner on the line with the Talk Radio News Service with her report from Washington, D.C. What's going on? Hey, Ellen, what's going on?
I'd be glad to take calls from listeners on any of this as well.
Okay.
Two interesting things. The House Committee met this morning about page 411 and 416 of the 9/11 report, and they talked to several former CIA directors. James Woolsey, who was director under Clinton from 93 to 95, decided to take full aim at Clinton. He said, well, he didn't have a bad relationship with any of the presidents, but when he was director of the CIA, he had no relationship with the president.
Yeah.
He never mentioned Clinton's name. He didn't have to. He also said that he sort of accused Senator DeConcini of transferring relationships and getting in the way of relationships. He also said that he was very worried about having this new intelligence czar because he said it leans towards czardom. And then he said, well, he is also worried. He then brought up the issue of, as you know, remember, the head of the 9/11 Commission said that sharing intelligence was a big problem. He said, well, it brings up the issue of Ames and others and sharing information, which was what he called the walkers. So then Stansfield Turner gets on, and he was the CIA director during Carter. And he said, well, Carter issued a very similar executive order to what the 9/11 Commission had, and essentially a director of Central Intelligence was not just head of the CIA, that it was not very different than Carter's recommendation, and that it didn't necessarily give him total authority, but that it allowed this person to really coordinate, and that he said that that was very, very useful. And then of course it came back to a lot of questioning, et cetera, and even Woolsey said, well, yes, this cooperation allowed them to develop the Predator, et cetera. Several of the people said, well, that the authorities that what was happening going on, actually Turner did not say this, but William Webster, who was FBI director from 78 to 87 and then a CIA director from 87 to 91, said, well, the Patriot Act was able to liberate the focus on telephones rather than the individual, he said
liberated
that
a lot.
There needs to be some more interrelationship in terms of the FBI really talking, Tom, about the issue of civil rights.
Yeah.
And he was specifically asked by the head of the committee, what's her name from Maine? Why am I blocking it? Susan.
Yeah. Is it Olympia Snow? No.
What?
No, Susan
Collins.
Yeah,
there
Susan
we go.
Collins.
Susan
yeah.
Collins. About what it would do to civil rights, and he just iced over it.
Yeah.
Completely and totally.
Yeah, this was Woolsey? So, was that Woolsey who iced over it?
It was Woolsey who iced over
it. Yeah, you know,
it was Webster who iced over it. Of course,
I mean,
Webster, who's got something involved because he was also CIA director.
Yeah.
I mean, FBI director as well as CIA director.
Yeah.
So that was sort of hearing one. And the other very interesting hearing was a hearing this morning that dealt with the whole what we're doing with the transportation security.
Mm.
And I was on a plane yesterday with Barbara Boxer, so I had a pretty good idea of what she was going to say. She said, we have to pass a rail security bill. Every member voted for it, didn't get passed. We have to pass the port security bill. Every member on the committee voted for it, didn't get passed. We have to put the anti-missile stuff on the aircraft, but the administration was moving at a snail's pace. And I don't know if you're aware of this, when I talked to Barbara Boxer yesterday, I was with our military correspondent from United Airlines, and if an air marshal if a pilot wants to be trained in how to use that gun,
mm-hmm.
they have to take a week's vacation. They're not paid to do it.
Oh, geez. So, yeah, this administration has just completely failed to protect the homeland. I'm not remembering immediately where I saw it, but I think it was in the New York Times, the picture of the chlorine tank a tanker, railroad car going over the bridge with the Capitol in the background.
Right.
And the whole article about how if somebody had blown up that one tanker, that it would have killed 100,000 people within a 10-mile radius. You know, it's just, I mean, it's, but the administration does not want to put into place the rule that has been recommended that all highly toxic rail cargo be routed around major cities rather than through them. It's
and that's just one of them. And then McCain, who's head of the committee, pipes up and he said, well, why do we have to have these guys, air marshals on the planes, dressed so nattily? He said, they show up like sore thumbs.
Yeah, amazing.
It was a wild hearing.
Yeah, I can imagine. Ellen, thanks for the report.
You're
thanks
very
for the call.
Welcome.
It's great to hear from you. Keep up the good work there, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
You got it.
Okay, bye now. It's 16 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our number 1-866-889-8894. And now Jim in Ann Arbor, Michigan on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, not much, Tom. I just called to say I agree with about 99% of everything you're talking about.
But?
There's always 1% there that people don't get.
But that's good.
But anyhow, you got my vote anyhow.
Okay, well.
I'm neither a Democrat, Republican, or liberal, or conservative, or anything like that. I'm just a me.
Yeah.
An American citizen.
Yeah. See, I think all of us ultimately are.
Do you happen to know what our national motto means, in God we trust?
No, what does it mean?
Well, from years past, since the Bush administration started taking over, Daddy Bush, but it's gold, oil, and drugs. Spells God.
And gold, oil, drugs.
Gold, oil, and drugs.
It's the Ollie North story, right? It's the the Nicaraguan story.
You look at our nation. This terrorist stuff is all over gold, oil, and drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
If we get our people, you know. Afghanistan, one of the world's leading producers of what?
Heroin.
Cocaine?
Yeah, heroin. Heroin, not cocaine. That comes from South America.
Okay, heroin.
Yeah. Opium.
And oil. Middle East oil. We want the Middle East oil.
Yeah.
But we got to keep our nose in there to keep it.
Yeah, and we want the gas pipeline across Afghanistan.
Model. Gold, oil, and drugs.
Okay. Good one, Jim. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the smile.
Okay, Tom.
Good to hear from you. Thanks for listening to us on WSDS there. Keep listening.
Yeah, subscribe to your website.
That's great. That's great. Thank you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Jackie in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Jackie, welcome to the program.
Hi, I just have a comment. I just
sure.
have to say that I'm so tired of just seeing those Republicans having such control over the media.
Hmm.
And I want to say that I'm so glad we have a guy like you. And we should have a lot more programs like yours to bring out the Democratic side of the whole issue.
Well, thank you, Jackie. You know, it's actually, back in the 60s, Kevin Phillips wrote this book called The Emerging Republican Majority, in which he kind of predicted the 80s. And now there's a book out called The Emerging Democratic Majority. What I'm seeing happen nationally, politically, I'm also seeing in the talk radio industry. And that is that there are at least a dozen good, solid, quote, liberal, end quote, talk show hosts out there whose shows are growing and who are carving out larger and larger market niches and having success. And at the same time, we're seeing conservative shows, ratings start to crash. And I think the pendulum's swinging back. I think that people really do want to hear two voices. And in talk radio, anyway, the conservatives have had a lock on this thing for so long.
Well, we need it.
There's just tremendous opportunity here for progressives, liberals, and folks in the middle of the road to come along. I think, Howard Stern kind of waking up and coming alive, is a demonstration of that, too. So, anyhow, Jackie, thanks for the call. It was
okay,
nice to
yes,
hear
sir.
From
thank you.
Thank you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, John in New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can. You're live and on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to express my point of view rather than get into a debate or
sure.
Why I am not so alarmed about Ralph Nader. I voted at the last second. I changed my vote from Nader to Gore because of the way circumstances were going, and I think that's an option I can still have.
Mm-hmm.
Meantime, I really think that. Well, having been raised in Chicago, I saw plenty of Democrat corruption. I don't see any value in thinking conventional wisdom anymore or acting out of fear. I think the truth is that that I have the power in my life, and no matter what the circumstances are, I will continue to have that power, even if Bush gets into office. So I'm not going to operate from the place that Bush being reelected is the worst-case scenario.
Well, you know, that sounds good.
The reason I think that is because what seems to be happening is that it's about from 45 to 55% of the people who are growing alarmed about Bush. Maybe with 35% in the beginning. And if we get another Bush, it's because we really need more people to wake up. And it's like telling somebody who has a smoking problem.
Yeah, it's the theory that alcoholics don't stop drinking until they hit bottom, and the country's
exactly.
not. Yeah,
and the reason I'm saying that is because I don't want to give away my power to circumstances out there, and so to worry about Nader,
but
you're worrying about it, is to deflect us from that truth that we have the power, and that even if Bush is reelected, that's going to be the catalyst then for us waking up and taking back our power.
Okay, good point, John. And the way that we take back that power, in my opinion, is by participating in the political process and infiltrating the political parties. The Republicans and the Democrats are not a them out there. They are open societies. You can walk in the door and say, I want to be a part of this. I want to participate. I want to create change here in both those parties. So, you know, why not? Go for it. 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
From uneducated laughingstock to government minister, an African woman's story of courage. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Frances Moore LePage met a lot of courageous people while researching her book, Hope's Edge, but few were as inspiring as Wangari Maathai, an uneducated young woman concerned about the loss of forests in her East African country of Kenya.
Here's a woman who in 1977 planted 7 trees on Earth Day, and her vision was tree planting throughout her country of Kenya because of the loss of the forest there. The government said unschooled village women can't plant trees. It takes foresters to do that. Well, she started a village movement of tree planting and has succeeded in 20 million trees being planted and surviving in Kenya through nurseries run by unschooled village women.
LePage tells Maathai's story in her new book called You Have the Power. She describes how Maathai's tree planting program drew the unwelcome attention of Kenya's dictator, Daniel Arap Moi. The young woman was ridiculed, beaten, and imprisoned for her efforts. But things have changed. Democratic elections in 2002 brought in a new government headed by the National Rainbow Coalition. LePage says Wangari Maathai is now part of the new power structure.
And here, a woman who had been jailed and beaten by the Moi government is now the deputy minister for the environment in the new government and helping to write a new constitution for Kenya.
LePage says Maathai is a person of unusual courage and persistence, and her story can serve as an inspiration to others fighting an uphill battle to protect the environment.
When we were there in Kenya, her message was that she didn't know that she could succeed. Her message was that she just kept walking.
That's Frances Moore LePage, author of You Have the Power. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. What an interesting day. Chavez, Hugo Chavez, taking back Venezuela. The world waking up in some ways, and yet Afghanistan and Iraq both melting down. Just remarkable times we live in. Absolutely remarkable times. Speaking of remarkable, here's Billy from Santa Cruz, isn't it, Billy?
Hello?
Hey, Billy.
Hi. Actually, Santa Fe, Tom.
Oh, Santa Fe. Oh, it's not Billy. It's who is this? I've got the... Is this Ricky?
No, this is first time I've called, Tom.
Okay, great. What's your name?
Billy in Santa Fe.
Oh, Billy in Santa Fe. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm mixing up my Billies. Hey, Billy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you just fine.
Forgive my confusion. Okay, good. I wonder if you could help me. I would like to know, this might be a little off subject, but I would like to know if you happen to know what is the latest with Sybil Edmonds?
I don't know. You know, we had her on the program here. In fact, it was a day that Rama Schneider was filling in for me, and he interviewed her. This was 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe more like a month ago. And, you know, she's been giving her testimony, and as far as I know, it's sort of in limbo. But you know, let me track that down and report back, okay?
Yeah, I know she had said that her last hope was that 9/11 commission, and then when they, you know, basically... did nothing in regards to that. She put out an open letter to them and really pretty well skewered them.
Yeah. But I don't think, to the best of my knowledge, there has not been any action that has been taken of any consequence, certainly, other than the FBI coming out and admitting that, yes, they did, in fact, fire her because she was a whistleblower. I mean, they have admitted to what she accused them of, in part. But the cleanup inside the FBI... you know, whether that's happening or not, they're not talking, as far as I know. So,
well, I'll tell you, the word patriot, she gets thrown around a lot, but to me, I mean, she's the epitome of patriot.
Yeah, she and a lot of other people who you know, stand up, speak out, or just do their jobs. I mean, the kids that we've got in Iraq right now, for example, you know, the anti-patriots are the people who are like Ashcroft, who's saying, well, let's cover up what Sybil Edmonds is finding. or, you know, Bush, who's, well, you know, let's have a war in Iraq so that we can get reelected. You know, this is and get some oil. You know, this is the real problem. Rama says, last he heard, the FBI inspector said that Sabell was a legitimate whistleblower, and she has at least one lawsuit still outstanding, and he doesn't remember which suit it was, though. So we'll find out, and I'll report back. Billy, thanks for the call. Great to hear from
you. Thank you.
Bye. Bye now. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, helping you win the water cooler wars. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. And maybe a little on the left, too. Okay, I'll copy.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. No one would argue that President Bush has been a champion of labor, and on Thursday, hundreds of union and community members protested Bush during a campaign stop in southern Nevada. Bush was speaking on jobs and the economy at the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners Union Hall. Protesters were also angry about Bush's decision to allow Yucca Mountain to be turned into a nuclear waste dump.
The governor of Kentucky is being sued by labor unions representing thousands of state workers. Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher is being sued by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, the Service Employees International Union, the Auto Workers, and the Teamsters for abolishing an advisory council that was used by unions to bargain with the state government. The council was set up by the previous Democratic governor, Paul Patton, and allowed categories of employees to vote to be represented by a union during discussions of workplace conditions. The suit, filed Thursday, claims the governor refused to honor union contracts.
Still no progress between U.S. Airways and the Machinist Union this week. On Friday, shares of the airline fell by 23% due to the chief executive's announcement that a deal could not be reached. U.S. Airways had previously announced that it wanted to have all labor agreements signed by September 30th, the deadline set by the U.S. government to avoid defaulting on a $900 million loan. The pilots and flight attendants unions have also been reluctant to accept the hundreds of millions of dollars in pay and benefit cuts demanded by U.S. Airways. It's almost certain that the airline will file for bankruptcy in September.
45 hotel workers were arrested Saturday in a demonstration to bring attention to their union contract dispute. The workers were part of a larger protest of 2,000 union employees in downtown Los Angeles. Police say they arrested the protesters after they failed to disperse after the 30 minutes allowed for the demonstration were up. Employees at five downtown hotels have been demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as contracts for employees in seven other cities, including Chicago, Boston, and New York. If hotel worker contracts in all of those cities end at the same time, it would give the hotel worker union massive bargaining leverage in the future.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, between 1996 and 2002, more than 1 million immigrants have been deported from the United States. Mexicans were by far the highest number of deportees, with over 826,000, followed by Hondurans, Salvadorians, and Guatemalans, each over 27,000 deported.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Suppose an amendment was proposed to give corporations a constitutional right to buy our government with their big money donations to politicians. Wouldn't you fight such an arrogant power grab? Well, gird yourself, for an amendment that does exactly that has been proposed, not in Washington, but in Arizona. This is one of six states where voters have approved clean election laws that provide public funds for candidates who agree to accept no special interest money. Not only is this public alternative popular with candidates of all political parties, since they no longer have to spend endless hours kissing corporate butts to be able to run for office, but it also works. In Arizona, for example, 9 of the 11 statewide officials, including the governor, and a third of the legislature, have been elected without taking a dime from the corporate powers, thus owing nothing to them. This has, of course, infuriated the old power clique, which is used to buying these officials and running things. So assorted corporate interests have put up hundreds of thousands of dollars to put a constitutional amendment on the Arizona ballot this fall that bans the use of public funds for clean elections, forcing the state back to the bad old days of corporate-funded and corporate-controlled politicians. The people of Arizona, however, are fighting back with a Keep It Clean campaign to defeat this big-money power grab, and they need our help. To battle the $10,000 and $20,000 checks that all of the corporate fat cats are putting up, they need us alley cats from all over America to chip in $5 each to keep Arizona clean. We need to spread clean elections, not kill them, and Arizona is the place for all democracy fighters to take a stand. This is Jim Hightower saying, Abe Lincoln, who said we should have a government of, by, and for the people, is pictured on a $5 bill. To support that ideal, send your own Abe to Arizona. To donate $5, call 602-364-3477.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George the W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Bob Herbert in the New York Times today notes the big story out of Florida, of course, was Hurricane Charley. But in the midst of Hurricane Charley, what could be a much larger story for American democracy was apparently overlooked by most of the media. It turns out that in Florida there is a large activist community, particularly within the black community, working to get out the vote. And some of this goes back to Reconstruction. Some of it goes back to the Civil Rights era. You have people who have, many of them in their 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, who have spent years and years and years working as advocates for voting rights for minorities, principally for African Americans. And they're, by and large, members of relatively poor communities in Florida. And now we have the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, which reports, of course, directly to Jeb Bush, showing up on the doorsteps of the people who are participating in these voting, in these get-out-the-vote drives for the black community, and telling them that they are conducting an investigation of criminal activity that relates to the vote. Bob Herbert, the state police officers, armed and in plain clothes, have questioned dozens of voters in their homes. Some of those questioned have been volunteers in get-out-the-vote campaigns. He asks Gio Morales, a spokesman for the Department of Law Enforcement, Bob Herbert, he says, I asked if all the people interrogated were black. Well, Morales said, mainly it was a black neighborhood we were looking at. Yes. He also said most of them were elderly. When I asked why, he said, well, that's just the people we selected out of a random sample to interview. Oh, you do a random sample of voters, and it turns out that they're all black and elderly. That's very random. Mr. Egan, Joseph Egan, an Orlando lawyer, who represents Ezzy Thomas, 73 years old, the Orlando League of Voters. This is one of these get-out-the-black-vote groups. 73-year-old Ezzy Thomas. Bob Herbert notes, Mr. Thomas is a tempting target for supporters of George W. Bush in a state in which the black vote may well spell the difference between victory and defeat. The vile smell of voter suppression is all over this so-called investigation by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Now, said Mr. Egan, the fear generated by state police officers going into people's homes as part of an ongoing criminal investigation relating to voting is threatening to undo much of the good work of the league. He said, one woman asked me, am I going to go to jail now because I voted by absentee ballot? See, many of these people, they distribute absentee ballots to them and deliver them to the polls. They don't have a car. They can't drive. They're in their 70s. They can't get to the polls. According to Mr. Egan, quote, people who have voted by absentee ballot for years are now refusing to allow campaign workers to come to their homes. And volunteers who have participated for years in assisting people, particularly the elderly or handicapped, are scared and don't want to risk a criminal investigation. As Bob Herbert notes, the long and ugly tradition of suppressing the black vote is alive and thriving in the Sunshine State. This heavy-handed state police investigation that throws a blanket of fear over black voters in Florida. This is a story that really deserves wider notice. And if you don't see it being, covered or reported on in your media, in your local media or your national media, the national media in particular, and this is really a national story, let them know. Hey, are you guys going to look into that situation of suppressing the black vote in Florida? Speaking of suppression, another story in the New York Times today. The Federal Bureau of Dateline Washington is an article by Eric Lichtblau. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has been questioning political demonstrators across the country and in rare cases even subpoenaing them in an aggressive effort to forestall what officials say could be violent and disruptive protests at the Republican National Convention in New York. Preemptive strikes. You have preemptive war, you can have preemptive arrests. Now we know that you're thinking something evil. Some people contacted by the FBI, says Lichtblau in the Times, say they are mystified by the Bureau's interest and felt harassed by questions about their political plans. Sarah Baldwin, 21, is an intern at a Denver anti-war group. Six investigators showed up. She says, the message I took from it was that they were trying to intimidate us into not going to any protests and to let us know that, hey, we're watching you. The unusual initiative, the New York Times notes, comes after the Justice Department, in a previously undisclosed legal opinion, gave its blessing to these tactics. This is, by the way, this is the same office, the Justice Department's Office of Legal Policy, that in June made headlines around the world by writing a brief saying, torture's okay, basically. Torture against terrorism suspects in some circumstances. They backpedaled on that one. I doubt they're going to backpedal on this one. This is, in fact, here's their opinion. They said, given the limited nature of such public monitoring, any possible chilling effect caused by the bulletins would be quite minimal and substantially outweighed by the public interest in maintaining safety and order during large-scale demonstrations. Then the Times tells the story of three young men in Missouri who said they were trailed by federal agents for several days, then subpoenaed to testify before a federal grand jury last month, forcing them to cancel their trip to Boston to take part in a protest there that same day. Are we losing democracy in the United States of America? Are the police powers becoming so powerful that the founders would have been cringing? Or is this the necessary thing that you have to do to make sure that there's no disruption of the Republican National Convention? Is there a serious threat out there that we should preemptively deal with? And if so, is this the way to deal with it? Do you deal with it by intimidating people? Or does that cause blowback? Does that cause them to might that cause them to overreact? My take on this is that we have gone too far. That this Justice Department brief suggesting that the chilling effect is no big deal is just, they have just pushed it too far. This is the logical extension of the free speech zones that George W. Bush started when he was governor of Texas, and now he's been doing nationally for the last 3 years. And I'm astounded that there hasn't been a public outcry about this. That if you show up just to stand in the street, I mean, to stand on the sidewalk along the street, on a public street, near an event where George Bush is giving a speech, or Dick Cheney, and you are wearing a Bush-Cheney t-shirt or holding a Bush-Cheney sign or anything like that, anything pro-Bush, no problem. You can stand there. If you're wearing an anti-Bush sign or carrying an anti-war sign or are wearing an anti-Bush t-shirt, the police will select you out of the crowd and take you away to the free speech zone, up to a mile away in some cases, a barbed wire cage or a chicken wire, you know, not chicken wire, what is it? Chain link fence cage with police, guns, mace, clubs. And this has been going on for 3 years. And Americans are just going, well, you know, I guess that's okay. I don't think so. And look at the people all across the United States, individuals who just, you know, happen to show up. Intentionally, okay, fine. Showed up at Bush events wearing anti-war t-shirts or anti-Bush t-shirts and got arrested. The most recent one in West Virginia. Well, it seems that our style of democracy is also this very unfortunate. I don't want to say our style of democracy because this is not the America that I know. No other president in 225 years, no other president felt it necessary, on the one hand, or thought it legal to select people out of a crowd because of the type of speech that they're engaging in a public place and put them in a cage and threaten them with arrest if they fail to go. This is just, it's over the top. It's over the edge. This is not American. This is anti-American, what this Bush administration is doing. And so, and now, okay, in Iraq, we are bringing democracy to Iraq, right? I remember one time, this was in 1981, I was flying over to Africa with Dick Gregory. He was going along. He was going to help raise some money for a program. We had taken over a prison camp in northern Uganda and turned it into a refugee center. And we were over the Atlantic Ocean at 3 o'clock in the morning talking. And he says, you know what I don't understand? What I don't understand is how Americans think that we can run around the world shoving our way of life down people's throats with the barrel of a gun. He said, when you've got something good, you don't have to force it on people. They will steal it. The Iraqi people are trying. I think that there are really and truly some people in Iraq who are trying to steal democracy, who are trying to get it, trying to make it happen. But when we go into Najaf and we say, any reporters here will be arrested, and then the reporters that choose to stay, their hotel gets shot at minutes after the deadline ends, which is what happened in the last 24 hours. Some 30 reporters chose to stay in the C Hotel in Najaf, and bullets started raining down on the top of their hotel where they stand to report and, you know, feed their satellite uplinks. And they were not bullets from Satter's guys. Satter's guys, the Mehdi army, they want the reporters there because they're afraid that it's being set up for a bloodbath. No, it was the Iraqi security forces. These guys are just going right back to Saddam's techniques. They're just embracing them as quickly as they can. It's truly scary. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. In my new book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy, I examine how Thomas Jefferson's democratic vision for our nation has been under constant attack by conservatives who see political power as a tool to manipulate laws for their personal financial gain. Among the truths you'll learn by reading this book are how Jefferson warned that the merging of big business with state interests could be the greatest threat to democracy. Today we find that these fascist ideals have been prevalent in virtually all of George Bush's political and judicial appointments and legislation, the same as Hitler did when he overthrew the German democracy in 1933. You'll also learn how new scientific studies show that Jefferson was right when he cited in the Declaration of Independence that democracy was consistent with the laws of nature. Turns out that the natural state of all animals is democracy, and alpha animals only rarely act as leaders. What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy by me, Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. If you have thoughts on this or other issues of the day, we've got a fair amount of news here. I got some interesting ads that MoveOn.org has put together. We'll get to those. Let's first go to the phones. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, the hurricane missed you, eh?
It was close enough.
Yeah. You're in Sarasota, aren't you?
Yeah, and I, after I took a shower, I went out and it blew my hair dry beautiful.
Yeah, I suspect not. It was blowing pretty wet water. Yeah,
It was really wet and then dry, wet and dry. It was cycling. It was pretty crazy, really.
Interesting. Well, that's not what you called about. What's up?
Well, I saw Dennis Kucinich about an hour ago with Wolf Blitzer and some other politician from Ohio or whatever, and they were having a debate about why he's bringing the troops back. And Kucinich made the point, and it's good. He says he's not pulling them out of Iraq. Basically, he's just doing this because of it's a swing state and it's political posturing for the election. And I think it's beyond that. I think that...
Let's just set this up. What you're talking about here, for those listeners who hadn't caught the news today, is that George Bush is announcing, I believe this afternoon at a VFW meeting, that he's going to be pulling... 70,000?
70,000 out of Europe.
Yeah, out of Europe and South Korea and Asia.
Right.
50,000 of them are coming out of Europe, as I recall.
Right.
And mostly out of Germany. And the Germans, of course, are concerned that this is going to affect the economies of the towns that are going to suddenly become ghost towns. But, you know, that's really not our problem. So, is there an element of payback there? So your take on this, why is he pulling these back? I'm guessing that he's pulling them back, number one, so he can cycle them into Iraq, and number two, so if he decides to invade Iran in October, he'll have some troops.
Let me tell you what I think. Bill Mayer, you know Bill Mayer of Politically Incorrect?
Yep.
He was on Larry King 2 weeks ago, and this went right under the radar. Did you see his interview with Larry King that night?
I did not.
Some lady called up, and this is right when the U.S. troops were getting their butts kicked over in Iraq, right at that time period, 2 weeks ago at a skirmish over there. Mm-hmm. And this lady called up, and she says, George Bush has given Iran a bunch of weapons. Now, what am I saying here? What am I saying here is they want to, I think it's all about Iran, the international war profiteers, otherwise known as the Illuminati, have already planned to do
the Iran number, and I think Bush is using... Hello?
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you, Armin, except instead of calling them the Illuminati, I would call it the Carlyle Group.
Well, that's part of the Illuminati, Saudi Arabia, private international cartel of investors, and they belong to other groups. I don't have to say the name. I think people that, you know, go out and study and have an open mind know the fraternities of some of these groups that are being manipulated and controlled.
So you're suggesting that that Bush is preparing to gin up a war purely for profit. I think that he's preparing to gin up a war partly for profit and partly for political power. He has played war like a musical instrument. I mean, you know, rolling out the Iraq war just before the elections in 2002.
But you got it backwards. What he's doing, he's trying to enhance his chances of getting reselected. And at the same time, he's posturing him so that, of course, the media, look how they tested the balloon in the waters with the other axis of evil, Iran, in the last month. Look how they tested it real quick. They put the trial balloons out there.
And the third thing is the point that James Madison made, which is where, you know, when he was explaining in the Federalist Papers why when they wrote the Constitution, they chose not to give the power of the president to make war. He said that this is a power that corrupts people and that it shouldn't be taken away from the direct elected representatives of the people. And here we have the Senate having given this power to Bush. I mean, that was wrong. And then Kerry saying, I'd do it again. I'm slapping myself on the side of my head. But I'll vote for him anyway. And it's 29 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you. If you don't go with the lesser of two evils, you get the greater of two evils, right? Stick around.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. No one would argue that President Bush has been a champion of labor, and on Thursday, hundreds of union and community members protested Bush during a campaign stop in southern Nevada. Bush was speaking on jobs and the economy at the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners Union Hall. Protesters were also angry about Bush's decision to allow Yucca Mountain to be turned into a nuclear waste dump.
The governor of Kentucky is being sued by labor unions representing thousands of state workers. Republican Governor Ernie Fletcher is being sued by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, the Service Employees International Union, the auto workers, and the Teamsters for abolishing an advisory council that was used by unions to bargain with the state government. The council was set up by the previous Democratic governor, Paul Patton, and allowed categories of employees to vote to be represented by a union during discussions of workplace conditions. The suit, filed Thursday, claims the governor refused to honor union contracts.
Still no progress between U.S. Airways and the Machinist Union this week. On Friday, shares of the airline fell by 23% due to the chief executive's announcement that a deal could not be reached. U.S. Airways had previously announced that it wanted to have all labor agreements signed by September 30th, the deadline set by the U.S. government to avoid defaulting on a $900 million loan. The pilots and flight attendants unions have also been reluctant to accept the hundreds of millions of dollars in pay and benefit cuts demanded by U.S. Airways. It's almost certain that the airline will file for bankruptcy in September.
45 hotel workers were arrested Saturday in a demonstration to bring attention to their union contract dispute. The workers were part of a larger protest of 2,000 union employees in downtown Los Angeles. Police say they arrested the protesters after they failed to disperse after the 30 minutes allowed for the demonstration were up. Employees at five downtown hotels have been demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as contracts for employees in seven other cities, including Chicago, Boston, and New York. If hotel worker contracts in all of those cities end at the same time, it would give the hotel worker union massive bargaining leverage in the future.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, between 1996 and 2002, more than 1 million immigrants have been deported from the United States. Mexicans were by far the highest number of deportees, with over 826,000, followed by Hondurans, Salvadorians, and Guatemalans, each over 27,000 deported.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now, Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along.
And welcome back.
Everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on.
Yeah.
He never was a hero for this county's shining light. But you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right.
Oh, man, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Let's go to the phones here. We have Bob in, is it Groton, Mass. Or Groton, Mass?
Groton, Mass, right.
Groton, Mass. There you go. Bob, listening to us on radiopower.org. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Yeah, one of the things that's really struck me is that in some ways it's the outrageousness of what Bush and his people do that works in their favor in some ways.
Yeah.
That I think one of the things that keeps the media from fully discussing what's happening is that it's, in order to discuss it, it makes them sound partisan.
Yeah. Well, it's and there's an element of the big lie technique in there too. You know, if you do or say something that is totally outrageous, people go, well, you know, there must be some truth to that. I mean, how could they say something like that if it wasn't true? I mean, weapons of mass destruction, they're going to, you know, 45 minutes, they can blow us up. I mean, it does sounds pretty weird, but must be true, you know. Well, actually, the weapons of mass destruction, I suppose, didn't sound all that weird. But unfortunately, the world that we live in, the Don Rumsfeld had gone over there and sold them all that stuff during the Iraq-Iran war to Saddam, and we just figured he still had it. But
yeah, I mean, I was thinking of the outrageousness, for example, when you were discussing the free speech zones. You know,
yeah.
That's an outrageous thing. I mean, it just happens and just accepted.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think it takes a lot to make me speechless. I'm just thinking, I am remembering what it was like in the 60s and the late 60s and the early 70s. Where I was in East Lansing, Michigan, you know, where the students would come out and the anti-war protests. And if somebody had come along and said, okay, over in that cage, I mean, it would have been the end. And it's like there's this great sleepwalking that's going on. You know, it's the sleepwalking through history is the book that Haynes Johnson wrote about the Reagan years. And it's almost like Americans are sleepwalking again. We need to just grab them and say, you know, wake up. I mean, look at what's going on. It's time to bring back Howard Beale. Here's what we need to be saying.
You gotta say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window. Open it and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Yeah, there you go. What do you think, Bob?
I keep hoping that's going to happen. This,
yeah. Okay.
Fall. I keep hoping.
Well, let's be those agents. We are the people who are going to say it is time to wake up. It is time to wake up. We must. Bob, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Barbara in Columbus, Ohio on the line. Hey, Barbara, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I just want to make a comment, sort of relating to when you mentioned the free speech zones, and relating to George Lakoff, if you've heard of him.
He, I certainly have.
The linguist who is developing theories, on moral politics. He wrote a book called Moral Politics, and he talks about how the Republicans or the right wing has framed issues so well for the last 30 years. They they've made a project of it and have all these think tanks and everything. But really, a free speech zone, that's a framing device.
Sure.
You could call it a restricted speech zone. I mean, that's really what it is, right? It's not about free speech, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so Lakoff talks about these things. Now, about the taxes thing, there's Oliver Wendell Holmes said, I like to pay taxes with them. I buy civilization. So.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Yeah.
That's a nice
And Lakoff, in this interview I'm reading about by him, he talks about how they framed the issue tax relief from day one of the Bush administration, phrase tax relief.
Just the word relief implies that it's a burden,
And he said there's another, you don't just have to give new words, you have to reframe it and say that taxes are the price we pay for living in this society.
Yeah.
And he also talks about the nurturant parent model versus the strict father model and how the progressives believe in like a nurturant parent model, whereas the conservatives believe in a strict father model, and that's how they can say that people are sort of bad and shouldn't be given anything.
Yeah, Lakoff is absolutely brilliant on this stuff. It really, much of it really started back in the 60s and the 70s with neurolinguistic programming, NLP. And Lakoff doesn't credit Bandler and Grinder for developing the language of framing, for example.
Mm.
But it's old NLP stuff, and Newt Gingrich was the master of it, absolutely the master of it. And he brought it into the Republican Party. Actually, a long story, but a person that I know who is an NLP trainer was a consultant to the Republicans back in the 80s, and I thought it was the most immoral thing that could be done, but it's anyhow.
Do you think the Democrats have to do that now to get back?
Well, I think that it's like the force has a dark side and a light side. The tools of NLP, the framing, for example, are simply tools of communication. You can use them to very effectively communicate a positive message that is accurate and honest, or you can use them to lie very effectively. And the Republicans have been using them to deceive people. You know, the Clear Skies Initiative, the Leave No Child Behind, you know, the free speech zones, as you pointed out. Democrats have not been using them particularly well at all. This is in my mind a big problem. I would have no problem with people using devices such as framing that enhance their ability to communicate if they're communicating something that is important and that is honest and factual and truthful.
Yeah. We actually have a group here in Columbus, Ohio, that has had one meeting, and we're going to have future meetings where we discuss these issues. And it's the UA for Kerry group, which is actually gaining some national notoriety because Upper Arlington is one of the most richest suburbs in the country and quite Republican, actually.
Yeah.
And they've been all kinds of fun things going on, like sign stealing and things. But anyways.
Well, see, that's slipping over the edge into the dark side of the force, Barbara. Yeah.
What I'm saying is the Republicans are stealing the UA. We've had over 100 UA for Kerry signs stolen. And
Oh, geez.
At first the police were like, saying it was a prank, childish prank. And finally they've sat down with the leadership and they've decided that they will they wouldn't even take reports for the longest time, and finally.
No, it's time to put some video cameras out there and
some
nail
people
it.
Are, but we're trying. And now the word coming down is, we're trying. They're going to take it seriously, but we're not going to focus on it because it's a negative thing. So.
Oh my. Barbara, thanks for the call.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for bringing
Bye.
Up these issues. I appreciate it. Well said. And these are really important issues. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. James in Kenosha, Wisconsin, on the line regarding free speech zones. Hey, James, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I've had firsthand experience with the free speech zones.
Oh, really?
Bush made a stop in Kenosha, Wisconsin, earlier this year, and I went up to join the protest and got rounded up and segregated from, the main event.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm calling about, though, is there were a number of issues at the Democratic Convention that concerned me and infuriated me. One of them was that I didn't hear anybody from the podium address the razor wire and concrete and chain link outside the Fleet Center and say, as Democrats, this is not America. Take it down. And by their acquiescence, I think they've upped the ante for New York City. I mean, what are the Democrats supposed to say in response if things go, ballistic in New York.
Yeah, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And in fact, I was surprised when I first heard that there was the free speech zone outside the Democratic Convention. I was like, you know, who was responsible for this? And we tracked this down on this program, and it actually was not the DNC. They had nothing to do with it. It was the Boston Police Department, and they were doing it at the request of the Secret Service, which has just been routinely doing it. Now, when Kerry shows up for events, in fact, in our chat room just a few minutes ago, one of the folks in our chat room was talking about how they showed up for a Kerry event. It was just a couple days ago, and there were no free speech zones. There were thousands and thousands of people. You were supposed to walk through the metal detector to get in, but people were actually just flowing around it. There were so many people. There was essentially very little, almost no security. And there was security, but it wasn't this highly regimented. You have to have a pass. You have to have a ticket. Please sign this loyalty oath. Things that. And so you're getting, you know, Kerry pulling 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people into some of these gigs, and George W. Bush pulling 2,000, hand-picked, but, you know, makes better photo ops.
Well, I would hope that the campaign stops are going to be the precedents for his administration, but I'm disturbed by the fact that there was no, even if it was beyond their control, yeah, in Boston.
They should have protested.
Oh, I think so, because, yeah. I mean, first of all, that was going out across the world, and you know, we got this gulag set up in on an American street. It's not exactly reassuring to allies or potential allies in terms of what the spread of democracy means.
And it's not how you teach democracy to nations that are becoming democratic.
No, I don't believe so. You know, I also wanted to address, if I could, just real quickly, the guy from the Nader campaign.
Yeah, Kevin Zeese.
I could be mistaken, but where has Nader been for the past 4 years?
Yeah, James, just for our listeners who might not have heard the last hour of the program, we had on the head of Nader's campaign, Kevin Zeese, trying to defend Nader's position in this election. Where has he been for the last 4 years? I don't know. I hadn't been paying that much attention to him, frankly. I think the point that I tried to make to Kevin was that Ralph Nader actually produced tremendous change in the United States with, you know, Unsafe at Any Speed, with the Center for Auto Safety, for the Public Citizen, all the various watchdog groups that he created. And if he really wanted to advance one or several of the issues that he is putting on the table with his campaign, which, you know, issues which I by and large agree with, if he was to do the same thing that he has been doing for 50 years, if he was to create institutions or organizations of public advocacy to work for these and use them to get the issues out there, do the kind of grassroots promotion and advertising like MoveOn.org is doing in the political arena, where you raise money and you put things on TV or put them in the radio, get them out in the media, get them out in the press, and get these issues going, he could have done it so effectively.
Sure.
And instead, none of these issues are being talked about because he is the issue.
You know, and even if he wanted this work from the inside back in 96 when he decided to run for the presidency, my regret is that he didn't run for the Senate. I mean, imagine what the political climate might look like now if a Green of his stature had been casting votes and being heard on the Senate floor all these years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I think pop up every 4 years like a presidential cuckoo clock and say, I'm running, when he's been silent all this time beforehand, it loses the credibility. And it's a shame because his legacy is just tremendous.
Yeah, he's becoming a caricature of himself.
Tom, I really appreciate the program.
Thank you, James. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 14 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let me just tell you about this real quickly, and then we'll take another call here. Russian scientists claim discovery of alien spaceship. Now, this is serious. This is absolutely serious. Moscow. Russian scientists claim to have discovered the wreck of an alien device at the site of an unexplained explosion in Siberia almost 100 years ago. This, for those of you who remember Tunguska, I think I'm pronouncing it right, Tunguska. It's a river in Siberia, and in around 1909, more or less, I think it was 1909, there was this just absolute fireball explosion that was like a nuclear bomb that just flattened 100 miles of trees, 100 square miles of trees. And the only explanation anybody could come up with was that it was a meteorite, but it, you know, no meteorite has ever done that before. And it just, you know, it had the impact of a nuclear bomb. And now the Russians are saying, well, it was a spaceship. Yeah, 1908 was when the thing crashed. And they've got a 50-kilogram piece of this thing. Fascinating. 1-866-889-8894. Nate in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Nate, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? Thanks so much for your program.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for calling it.
Yeah, just more on the free speech zones. I actually have a kind of a legitimate question I'm kind of concerned about, because I'm a Kerry supporter, and I went to a Kerry rally just after Edwards was chosen, and had to park far away because all the security and stuff, and the caravan about to come through and whatnot. And so I actually was able to choose to walk through these protesters, about 20 or 30 Republicans with their signs and stuff, and had a good time shouting at them. But they weren't in any kind of cage or anything. But when I got into the venue later on, one of them kind of came in, and you weren't supposed to bring in signs, and he had this anti-Kerry sign. And I guess it was Teresa Hines, Kerry was saying something, he lifts up his sign, and for some reason or other, I was just, I guess, stretching my arms, and boom, I tapped his sign, and it went flying, and we were kind of like two,
what a coincidence.
In a Western movie, kind of looking at each other and then diving for the gun on the bottom of the saloon floor,
right.
And next thing I knew, though, it was very strange, a strange force, maybe having to do with something like what just was discovered up in Siberia or whatever.
Yeah.
This force pulled him away, and it turned out later to be security guards, and they drug him away.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if it was just, Kerry thugs or security guards or whatever, so I kind of followed them to make sure that this guy I, kind of disagreed with wasn't going to get beaten up, because I didn't want to be responsible for that.
Right.
But it turned out it was. It was just security, and they took, they took him away, and that was, I guess, kind of fine with me in a sense. So my question is, he has free speech, he's in America, and was I wrong for hitting his sign and having it, his little free speech? Or how does that work exactly?
These are the questions, Nate, that we need to be asking. This is the dialogue that we need to be having in the United States right now, I believe. I'm guessing that they're saying, probably disingenuously, that you can't have signs because they can be used as weapons. And you can't bring, because I know the FBI, with some of these protesters earlier, arrested them in Boston for having sticks, that they're going to make signs out of, call them weapons. But we need to talk more about this.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war, and Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pollution might be driving up the cost of health care. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Healthcare costs are soaring, driven up by a variety of factors, including pharmaceuticals and malpractice insurance. But something else might also be pushing medical costs upward: pollution. Kent Bransford is a medical doctor and a member of Physicians for Social Responsibility. He says an asthma epidemic is at least partly due to dirty air.
About 1 in 14 kids now has asthma. So we're looking at an epidemic in asthma that's really occurred in the last couple of decades. Not all of that's related to air pollution, but a lot is related to air pollution. And that's very time-consuming and expensive medications, long-term health effects that we pay for every day.
Bransford says a number of studies show a clear link between childhood asthma and air quality. He says we need to clean up power plants, diesel engines, and other sources of air pollution.
We can deal with them cost-effectively so that we not only can minimize the danger to public health, but we can do it in a way that saves money for businesses, ultimately saves money for individuals who have to deal with health care and taking their children to emergency rooms and physicians and buying medications for asthma.
Bransford advocates a comprehensive approach to cleaning up emissions, which could cost billions of dollars.
On the negative side is probably higher utility rates in the short term, but on the positive side, lower health care consequences and health care costs.
Bransford says rising childhood asthma rates are one of the costs society bears for our failure to adequately clean up air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, Dr. Fred Miller, a name you probably haven't heard of, points out an uncomfortable reality. Fred Miller is a real security specialist. He sits on D.C., Washington, D.C.'s Local Emergency Planning Committee, and he points out that train cars carrying 90 tons in a single tank car of chlorine are being routed within a quarter mile of the Capitol building. A sudden release of chlorine from a 90-ton rail tank car could create a cloud 40 miles long and 4 miles wide and be fatal 8 to 10 miles downwind. If terrorists ruptured a tank car on tracks near the Washington Mall during public events such as the 4th of July or the inauguration, the deadly cloud could kill 100,000 people in a half hour, according to estimates from the U.S. Naval Research Laboratories. Now, why wouldn't the Bush administration... Why wouldn't keeping America safe, why wouldn't this administration say, you know, in the major cities that are at risk for terrorists, Washington, New York, Chicago, Houston, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, we're just going to make it a rule that if you've got a train car and it's carrying deadly cargo like this chlorine gas, liquid chlorine, chlorine gas, that you have to route it around the cities.
As Fred Miller says, this seems a no-brainer, since rerouting would eliminate the attractiveness to terrorists. Turns out, though, the railroads don't want to do this because it would cost more. The chemical industry doesn't want to do this because it would cost more. It would harm their profits. And so the Bush administration has taken a position against it. On Capitol Hill, for example, Greenwatch points out, on Capitol Hill, Representative Ed Markey, Democrat of Massachusetts, proposed a bill that would mandate the Department of Human Services, or the DHS, to reroute dangerous chemical cargoes. But Congress failed to take up the measure before going on recess. When promulgating regulations on hazardous cargo security in March of 2003, the Bush administration dropped any mention of routing from the final route, from the final rule, excuse me. They just dropped it. Said, no, ain't going to do that. It might cost some corporations some money. It might save 100,000 lives, but still, it would cost some of our donors some bucks. Got to be careful. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today. Thanks to Rama Schneider for coming in and engineering it. Thanks to Brad for our music and Shelby for streaming us around the world. Thanks to Mike Toth and Ben Birch for our archives. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to Jay for our music. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. And thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow, same time, same place, right back here.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior.